You look like you're about to cry.
You and I both know I don't cry.
It's just a scary look. I'm uncertain of what it means.
Like somebody should be crying, but they're not, so it makes it even scarier.
Yeah. It's exactly the look. It's like the look you get right before you murder somebody, I guess.
You would know.
Allegedly.
After doing a... Which one was that? Oh, that was the torso killer. And you being like, I can kind of feel for the guy. And then we started talking. I don't remember what it was. And you said something and Tori and I were like, you okay?
Hey, I mean.
There's being empathetic and then there's being a psycho killer.
It's a fine line.
I don't think you've teetered over that line yet.
Allegedly.
What if we just created a whole podcast and the whole time you were a killer? That's got to happen eventually.
I'm sure at some point
like, it does. Statistically, it has to happen eventually. I'm not saying I want it to happen. Like, don't kill me or anything.
Nah, I wouldn't kill you.
You'll be the first suspect. The husband always does it.
Yeah. But you and I both know that they'd never get me on Murder One because I never plan shit.
Impulse. Crime of passion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try not. I don't want to be murdered. Look at us recording, not on Sunday night at 9 o'clock.
You're right. It's Friday at 9 o'clock.
At least it's Friday and not Sunday because then I have to stay up till after midnight editing it. To get it posted for Monday. So at least I might do some of it tonight, but I'll have this weekend to get it edited, and then I've got to work on next week's episode, so I need to download all the stuff from your phone and my phone, start getting ready for next week, because next week is Creepy Tales Volume 2, our new little last week of the month fun chit-chat podcast. But this time we have something really cool.
Should be a lot of fun.
In case you guys missed it, last week we announced Josh and I went to the Haunted Hill House in Mineral Wells and investigated, toured, checked things out. It's a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I can't wait to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything? Anything? You bringing anything to the table today?
I'm bringing a little bit.
Like what?
My beautiful personality.
Oh. Your looks for radio?
Yep.
It's perfect.
Speaking of looks, my looks are getting better for radio.
Are they?
Yep. I can fit an extra large shirt again.
I know. Congratulations. How's that make you feel?
I'm not sure yet.
Did you have any shout-outs you want to give? Anything cool?
I can't think of anything right now.
One of these times, you're going to blow my mind. You're going to be like, yes, here's your gift. And I'm going to be like, oh my gosh.
I have to get you a gift now?
The gift is you coming, bringing something, a story, a shout out, a recommendation, something. Instead of, I don't think I have anything right now.
Well, what am I supposed to do?
Look at something scary, some kind of true crime or paranormal story that's happening. Or
look, this is my gig is to be the guy that just reacts to your story.
And just shows up?
Yeah. It's all I do here. I provide 1 to 2 stories every couple of months.
Well, we're almost on a year, and you've done 1.
2.
2.
You always only give me
credit. I know. For 1. I always forget. It all blends together. I'll give you 2. That's not every couple of months, brother.
It is, yeah. I go by dog years.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. It's adding up now. Speaking of, next week's... No, I guess that won't be a year. So the end of April will be a year. We're almost there. It's crazy that we've been doing this for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
And how far we've come. We'll have to do a special episode for that.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. Maybe you'll surprise me with a story. Oh, Doubt it. Well, I do have a shout out. So, Stessy. Let me tell you about Stessy.
How many of these have you had?
Hang on. It's kind of sour. It kind of hurts my...
It's pretty damn good.
I really like it.
I like it.
We're back to our roots. So, we haven't been having our glass of wine with our episodes because we've been recording on Sundays. But tonight, we're like, you know what? We're back to Friday.
Yep.
What are we drinking?
Well, we're back to our Stella Rosa.
Always.
But this time it's the pineapple and chili, which is kind of sweet with a little bit of spice to it.
I don't get any spice, but...
I barely get a little bit.
I need a refill.
Very little.
Don't spill it. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, back to our roots, Stella Rosa. But anyways, I do have a shout out. So, Stacy Myers. She is great about commenting and talking and sharing, and she does all the good stuff. Well, she actually shared a post today with me that goes with last week's episode. So, last week we did the history of the Alamo. Well, yesterday...
So does Stacy's mom got it going on?
I don't know. I haven't seen her.
Hmm.
I bet she does. She has to, right?
I mean, there's a whole song.
There's a whole song about it. Well, anyways, yesterday, they posted, archaeologist unearthed a rare, intact cannonball at the Alamo dated to the 1836 siege.
Oh, that's cool.
It's believed to... have belonged to the Mexican army. It's part of an ongoing $550 million preservation project. And researchers, they're now going to like analyze the relic and try to pinpoint where, like, the specific trajectory of where it came from and the point of impact with it at the site. So that's kind of cool.
It was pretty neat.
Really cool little picture. I mean, obviously, it just looks like a little ball, but yeah, she put that on our page today. So thank you, Stacy. We see you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Really neat. That's all I got.
Well, keep them coming.
Yeah, keep
it's definitely cool.
Keep commenting. Keep sharing. Again, it just helps us in the algorithm. Our numbers have, I think, more than doubled at this point. On average, each episode. So we're still steadily climbing, steadily getting more listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, more stories will come in and more suggestions, which I would love to have suggestions. That's kind of how we ended up with the Alamo last week, is because we didn't really know. I say we, me and my mouse in my pocket, didn't really know what I wanted to cover. So it'd be nice to have someone say, hey, I'm interested in this case. I want more information, or I find it interesting. I want to hear your take. It'd be great to have that. So send them our way. Tell us what you want to hear.
I could definitely give suggestions.
I'm waiting.
Okay. It's just the whole typing thing that I'm not so good at.
Tell me stories. Like, hey, I want this one. And then I can look into it, see what I can find.
Okay. We'll see what we can do.
But with that, so the story that I'm covering today is one that has stuck with me. So as one that consumes true crime like crazy, you always have those certain stories that just stick with you. And I keep picking those at the beginning, and I don't know. This one just blows my mind because of what happened and the craziness of it all. And there's been updates, quote unquote, kind of, as early as January or February of this year. Not any huge ones, but some updates. So this week, we are covering the case of Ellen Greenberg, which you don't know a lot about it. You were sitting next to me when I was listening to the 911 call. You heard a little bit about that, but I think that's really all you know about it, really.
Yep. This is going to be blind for me.
Going in blind. So I want to start off with showing you how absolutely stunning this woman was. She just has one of those, like, million-dollar smiles. You know how somebody smiles and you can just see it, like, it goes to their eyes and you can just, I don't know how to explain it. She's just a beautiful, beautiful girl, beautiful smile. And so that's who we will be talking about today. It's a lot. So this case, as I was researching it, I thought I knew it, which I knew the majority of it, but I didn't know the most recent updates. So the last I heard, I'm trying to see what I can say without spoiling it. I knew up to a certain point of this case, but like I said, there have been updates more recent that I did not know about. Mm-hmm. Even with those updates, they're still not great. There's still not a whole lot of movement, but at least there's movement. So maybe, hopefully, something will come out soon. I hope. So let me tell you just a little bit about Miss Ellen. Ellen was a fun-loving, bubbly, caring, beautiful girl. And she ends up moving to Philadelphia. After graduating from college, I think I seen where she actually was originally going to school to be like a speech pathologist or something like that. But then as she was getting into it, she called her dad and was like, this is not what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And he basically said, I told her, you know, do what you love. It takes more courage to start over and do something than being stuck somewhere where you're going to be miserable. Like, don't do that. And so she went back to college and ended up becoming a teacher, which all of her friends and family said, like, matched her perfectly with her personality and her love for kids, that was definitely her calling, is becoming a teacher. Many of her friends were settling down. They were starting their next stage of their lives, and she was dreaming of having the same thing. A friend of Ellen's actually set her up on kind of like a blind date. She knew that Ellen was kind of looking for something serious, not just like a one-night thing. She was looking to settle down, and she had a mutual friend named Samuel Goldberg. He came from a really good family. Ellen's friends and family were kind of excited for her because he seemed like a really good match. He seemed like a really good guy. So they talked on the phone for a few months, and finally they decided after about a month that they're going to go on their first official date. But Sam actually worked for, I think it was NBC. I should have put it in here. And he did a lot of traveling for work. I think he covered like sports or something. So he did a lot of traveling for work. So for them to have their first official date, she would actually have to fly to him.
Oh, wow.
So first time you're meeting this guy in person and you're having to fly to where he's at. And she was kind of nervous about it. And that was kind of outside of her norm. But they clicked so well over the phone that she's like, I think this could be it. Like, I want to at least give it a shot. So she did. So she flew out to him. They went on their date. They spent some time together. After that, that was all she wrote. They were together. They dated for about 3 years. And he would pop the question, I believe in June. Yeah. He did things like he would bring her coffee in bed, and he would, like, if it was cold out, he'd go start her car and warm it up. She was completely head over heels for him. And her family was really excited because she seemed happy and it just seemed like a perfect match. And so he did pop the question, I believe on the beach. They're visiting the beach and he proposed to her there. So it seemed like Ellen's dream of settling down and starting a family was finally becoming a reality. Well, later that year, about November, Ellen's family started noticing a little shift in Ellen. Nothing major. She just had, like, really high anxiety. They would ask her, like, what's going on? And she'd say, oh, it's work. Work is stressing me out. It's just work. And they're like, are you sure? That's it? And she's like, yeah, it's just work. Her friends kind of noticed the same thing. She used to be, like, very outgoing, very independent. with this new relationship with Sam, they'd be like, hey, let's go do this. And her response used to be, yeah, let's go. Well, now she's like, well, let me check with Sam. I need to check with Sam. And she kind of quit going out as much. But that's kind of common in new relationships, too. I mean, even like you and me, somebody will call me and, hey, let's go do this. And I'll call you. And it's not necessarily to ask for permission, but like, hey, I'm doing this. Are you cool with it? You got any other plans, you know?
And you know me, I'd never have plans.
You never have plans. You're just like, I don't care, whatever. Mm-hmm. So Ellen started, she was working. She was a kindergarten teacher. And again, she just kept saying, like, my anxiety's high. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's going on. It doesn't feel right. Like, I'm miserable. I'm stressed. She just wasn't herself, her normal, bubbly, outgoing self.
If I was a kindergarten teacher, I'd feel the same way.
Yeah, I don't know if I could. Yeah, that'd be hard.
Yeah.
Burnout would probably happen really quick.
Oh, man.
And I seen where not only was it just the normal stress, but that school district had up to 40 kids in each classroom.
Holy crap.
That's a lot of kids. That's a lot of kindergarten kids to have to be in charge of and constantly be on your toes and constantly going. And that's a very special person. Takes a very special person to do that job.
Yeah, it would absolutely take a special kind of person.
Yeah. Well, she was becoming more anxious by the day, and her loved ones, they weren't really sure what was going on. They weren't worried about her hurting herself. Like, she wasn't saying, I think I'm going to hurt myself or anything. She just kept saying, I'm overwhelmed. I'm stressed out. My anxiety is up. And just kept going and going. And when things didn't seem to get any better, Ellen's dad, Josh, told her, maybe you should speak to a psychiatrist, like see if somebody, a professional, can help you and try to navigate this and see what's going on, because it's not getting any better. She kept on saying, I think I want to quit. I don't think I can do this anymore. I want to quit. And her dad really didn't want to see her lose a job and then regret it later on, just because maybe she does have something going on mentally that she can work through. And then if she quits, it kind of will totally change the trajectory of her life to where, go get help, see if that helps, and go from there. So just being a dad, basically, just trying to guide her. So she did go see the psychiatrist, and after seeing the psychiatrist about 3 times, they did end up prescribing her some medication. They did try a few different ones before finding one that actually seemed to work for her, but she wasn't 100%, but she did say that she was feeling better. And the psychiatrist even made a note in Ellen's file saying that she was not suicidal and she did seem to be making progress. And she even texted her mom and was like, oh, I'm not 100%, but I do feel better. And her mom's like, oh, thank God. I'm so glad you're doing better. And then there was a text not too long after that where she kind of went back and was like, I'm feeling kind of crappy today, but maybe it's just today. We'll see how tomorrow goes. Now, Sam, like I said, worked out of town a lot, so he was away a lot of times. And I should mention, they live in an apartment here in Philadelphia, 6th floor. And this was really hard on Ellen when she would talk about their relationship, though. She's like, everything's perfect. Everything's good. He treats me good. We're good. Everything's peachy, peachy keen. Everything's fine. But it was hard on her with him working out of town. And she would text him just like any other person would. I miss you. And his texts seemed very normal. Miss you too. Thinking about you. And so everything seemed to be okay. Then the week of January 26, 2011, a big winter storm was coming in. It was snowing for days, and school would be released early, meaning teachers would be off of work as well. Again, Ellen was stressing about inputting grades. She just seemed really upset about getting them entered. Her friends and fellow teachers told her, don't worry, it's fine. But even with them saying that, she just seemed very worried. And I didn't understand why, but then I seen somewhere, I can't remember where I seen it, but they mentioned that maybe she, something about inflating some grades. She was worried that she was inflating grades. and it had something to do with that. I'm not sure, but she was stressed about these grades. But again, she's such a wonderful teacher that even when they let these kids out early, she called every single parent of her kids saying, hey, we're released early, they're on the bus, or there's this going on, and informed all the parents of what was going on before she left for that day. So you can tell she really did care for these kids, because she could have said, snow day, peace out, see y'all later. Let's see here. Another fellow teacher spent about an hour helping her clean off her car while he cleaned off his. And that entire time, Ellen really seemed to be on edge. He just kept talking to her and tried to calm her down. Ellen and her fellow teachers and friends basically would just say their goodbyes and they would head home. Everyone was, of course, looking forward to an unexpected break, but again, Ellen just seemed really distraught over these grades, even making a few phone calls on the way home saying, you know, I'm stressed about it, I don't know what to do. And they were like, girl, you've got it, you're fine. Well, Ellen's fiance, Sam, happened to be home that same week. Again, I think I talk about it later on the way home, she actually made a phone call, stopped at the gas station and filled her tank up with gas, completely full, her tank. Well, Sam would come home that day and he would end up going to the gym at about 4:50. He was gone for about 40 minutes. And at 5:28, Sam is seen on the lobby footage returning back to the apartment on the 6th floor. Once he gets to the apartment, the door is locked with the latch from the inside, according to Sam. He begins yelling and banging on the door to get in. He then begins texting Ellen. And those text messages said, now mind you, he's banging on the door because his fiance is not answering the door. And these are the text messages that he's sending. Open the door. What are you doing? I'm getting pissed off. Hello. You better have an excuse. What the fuck? You have no idea. So right off the bat, things seem a little weird. If you just seen your fiance, you were working out for 40 minutes and you came home and you're trying to get in the apartment and can't, and she's not answering. I mean, I understand being frustrated. Like, maybe she was in the middle of something, you think she's blowing you off. But to me, that escalated very fast. And you would think maybe it'd be like, hey, what are you doing? Like, let me in. But then when there's no response, wouldn't you start worrying a little bit? Like, what if there's a medical emergency? What if she... You know,
maybe, unless she's like you and just doesn't hear or feel her phone.
Okay. I don't know. I just think it's very weird because according to him, he was like pounding on the door.
Yeah.
Yelling and then sending these text messages. You would think instead of being pissed off, it'd be more like something's wrong. He would then go down to the front desk of the apartment and he told the concierge, Phil, that he couldn't get into the apartment and basically asked Phil, like, can you come let me in? And Phil's like, I can't do that. That's against policy. There's safety reasons. I can't just go let you into the apartment. He said, what I can do is I'll try calling up there. See if I can get a hold of her, see if we can get you in that way. But I cannot leave my post. I cannot physically go up there and let you in. So Sam would basically just be like, okay, whatever, and walked away. He seemed kind of pissy again. Sam would go back upstairs for a short time, and he would come back down. And this time, he seemed much more agitated than the first time. He tells Phil, I need to get into that fucking unit. And Phil asks, you know, is something wrong with her? Like, do you think it's medical? Like, what's going on? And he's like, I don't know. I just need in the apartment. And Phil's like, I can't help you. Like, there's nothing I can do. There's a policy against it. I can't leave my post. There's nothing I can do. So Sam walks away again. And as he's walking away, he kind of says, I'm just going to knock that fucking door down, and walks away. So Sam goes upstairs. He busts through the door. He busts through the door of the apartment where he would find Ellen. Ellen is slumped against a corner of the cabinets, with blood all over her body. There was blood smears on the cabinet, and you could kind of see where she had slid down the cabinet a little bit. You know how the cabinet, there's like the corner of the cabinet, almost like where Lazy Susan would be? She was right there at the corner of that cabinet, slumped against it. And there's blood. Sam would then call 911, and while he was on the phone with the operator, he discovers that a knife is sticking out of her chest. He didn't see it when he first walked in. So while he's on the phone with the 911 operator, he realizes she has a knife sticking out of her chest. The first responders end up showing up, and when they respond at first, they believe it could be a homicide. But they spoke with Sam, and then he mentioned that Ellen had mental health issues and was on medication for it. She was on Klonopin for her anxiety and Ambien, like a sleep aid, just to help her sleep. Before an autopsy was ever done, police ended up ruling it a suicide there on the scene. Before even removing her body, they declared it a suicide. The next day, the apartment manager received a phone call from Sam's uncle asking for access to the apartment to get a few personal items for her funeral. The manager called the police, like, hey, is that okay? Can I let them in? And they said, yeah, it was ruled a suicide. It's no longer an active crime scene. They're allowed to go up there. And she was like, well, I'm kind of worried about there's still blood everywhere. Like, I'm kind of worried about letting them in. They said, well, here's a number for a crime scene cleanup crew. They'll come clean everything up and then let them in. Everything should be fine. She said, okay. So she calls the cleanup crew. They come and, of course, scrub the entire apartment top to bottom because it's been ruled a suicide. After the apartment had been cleaned, Sam's uncle and another gentleman, I think I seen it was like his cousin or something, were escorted to the apartment. I will say this now. Sam's uncle was a very prominent attorney in the area, a well-known, very well-connected attorney in the area. The apartment manager stayed in the apartment as the two men went in and gathered a few things. Meanwhile, Ellen's family began contacting friends and family to let them know that Ellen had died and it was ruled a suicide. But remember, this huge winter storm came in, so they can't even leave their house because they live like 2 hours away. They can't even leave and be there for their daughter because they're snowed in. They can't get out, which I could not imagine. That's awful. They were all in disbelief. No one could believe that Ellen had done this. It just didn't make sense. Which, again, that's kind of a common occurrence. A lot of times when it is a suicide, the family's like, there were no signs, I had no idea, no possible way for anybody else to have killed her. But she has 20 stab wounds.
Mm-hmm. Seems awfully suspicious.
Very strange. And wait till you hear where the stab wounds were. Because they went ahead and ruled it as a suicide, they took very few photos of the scene or of Ellen's wounds. So they would not even discover the 20 stab wounds until the autopsy by the medical examiner. He did his job and did it. They didn't even know about
them. This is some really, really good police work right here.
The 20 stab wounds, there were some to the back of her neck, to her chest, and one to the top of her head.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
They would state that there were no signs of defensive wounds. After the medical examiner looked at the wounds and other evidence, he ruled the death a homicide.
Yeah, obviously.
Just 2 days later, Ellen's family would have Ellen's funeral. So they are Jewish, and I didn't know this, but it's normal for the Jewish community to have funerals very fast, very quickly after. During the funeral, Sam was seen wailing during the services, like over the top wailing during the services. And Ellen's dad, Josh, got up to give the eulogy. And that's when he would announce at the funeral that all of a sudden, Her death is now being changed from suicide to homicide. To make things worse, not only did he announce that at her funeral while he's giving her a eulogy, because he just found out, her family didn't even find out from the police. They found out from news reports on TV from a family friend, because the police didn't call them to tell them that they were changing it from suicide to homicide.
These cops are awful.
Absolutely devastating. So not only are you having to bury your baby, but you're having to find out that they changed it from suicide to homicide.
I mean,
from TV.
A call is
bare minimum.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of shit you show up to somebody's house for.
Yeah.
And you have a conversation.
Yep. And at that point, her family was even like, well, if they're changing it to homicide, like, are we burying her? Like, if it's a homicide, shouldn't we wait? But they told him, go ahead, go with the funeral. And so they buried their daughter.
By that time, they'd probably embalmed the body and destroyed any evidence that could have been there.
Too late. And if you remember, the uncle went to the apartment to gather things for the funeral, and the apartment has been scrubbed top to bottom by a professional cleaning service.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, it's now,
there's nothing impossible to investigate because they cleaned it all up and broke the chain of custody on everything.
Jesus. Please tell me that that police force got some sort of investigation.
Just wait. The entire room went completely silent, of course, once the dad announced that it had been changed. Like I said, they did go through with the burial. The police would return to the apartment to start searching the scene to see what they could find.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. The chain of custody of any evidence has now been broken. The police started asking for personal belongings, her phone, her computer, any technology, any of that. They were like, we need it because this is now a homicide. Well, what do you know? You remember Sam's uncle, who's a very well-connected attorney?
He had it all wiped.
He took her computer.
Mm-hmm.
He went to grab personal belongings for a funeral and took her computer. And mm-hmm. he's had it for about a week at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives it back to the police. He does give it back to him.
Awfully shady.
He does give it back to him. So he turns it over to the police. And one of Ellen's friends, she was actually contacted by the police. And they're like, you know, you and Ellen communicated quite a bit through text and everything. So we want to talk to you. And she was almost excited, like, they're looking into it. I've got my own questions to ask. But she said they showed up and asked like 6 questions and was like, that's all we need, and turned around and walked out. And so she was just like, what? You're investigating a homicide.
Yeah.
And you're going to ask me a handful of questions and turn around and leave?
And when you call an officer, you expect that they take everything that you do as seriously as possible and uphold it to the very extent of the law.
Yeah.
But then you find a lot of these other ones, and there are several. Now, by far, there's way more good ones than there are bad ones, but there's still several and way too many. That let stuff like this happen on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I'm sure sometimes it's just because they didn't want to do the bare minimum of paperwork.
Well, even this, you know, they show up and it's a joke. It's kind of a joke. Like, I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. The husband always does it. It's always the husband. Like, statistically, it's normally the husband.
Mm-hmm.
And they get there and he's like, no, I broke into the apartment and the concierge was with me when I broke into the apartment, and she's on anti-anxiety medicines and she's on this, and she was really depressed this last month. And they're just like, checks out. Okay. Meanwhile, there's a woman sitting there with a knife sticking out of her chest.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that was weird, which I don't think I talk about it later, but another thing that's weird is dying by suicide, by stabbing. Most of the time, if somebody's going to do that, they lift their clothes up. They will not go through their clothes. Mm-hmm. She did not. And then you take into consideration, she had, let me show you this diagram of the wounds. 20 stab wounds, half of them being on the back of her neck.
I don't see that happening.
How do you even do that? How do you do that?
It would be extremely difficult. I don't see that happening.
And they're saying suicide. And another thing that's crazy, which I don't think I saved any of the pictures, is the crime scene. When you think stab wounds, your head bleeds a lot.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't very much blood.
Well, then that probably happened post-mortem.
Hold on to that. Or somebody cleaned it up.
I suppose that's a possibility, too.
Because they never checked it. Mm-hmm. Because it was declared a suicide. So they never even, like, used the... What's that called?
The UV?
No, it's not called UV. Shit, what's that called? But yeah.
Yeah, that spray stuff?
Luminol. They didn't test it with Luminol. Mm-hmm. Because it was declared a suicide. And then they had a crime scene cleanup crew come in and clean it all up. It's too late. It's contaminated. Mm-hmm. Or, like you said, did it happen post-mortem? Mm-hmm. Hold on to that. So, where are we at? Oh, her friend. So, the cops come in, they ask the friend literally a handful of questions, and she was just like, that's it? That's all you're going to ask me? She did mention, and other friends mentioned, that they noticed that Ellen wasn't wearing her wedding or her engagement ring. They'd ask her, like, where's your ring? And she'd be like, oh, it doesn't fit, or I forgot it, or, like, she would always have an excuse of why she wasn't wearing her ring, which at first she wore her ring all the time, but just the last couple of months she quit wearing her ring. And they thought that was strange.
The fingers are pointing in a certain direction.
Allegedly. This is all for entertainment purposes. You cannot sue us. This is all just hypothetically. Mm-hmm. Okay.
These are opinions only.
There you go. When police asked Sam about it, he told police that, oh, she just doesn't wear it to work, so that's why she didn't have it on. Which, again, she's a kindergarten teacher. If I didn't see the wedding ring. If it's big, you could worry about scratching the baby's face or whatever. Or I say baby's kid's face. You know, I can... okay, I can see that maybe. Depending on what you're doing, whether you can wear a ring or not. So, I'll let that one slide. Well, they asked Sam about his day, that day, and he said that she got home just after 1:30 and was really upset, saying she wanted to quit her job. Sam said that she never threatened to hurt herself, but that January she was more depressed than she had ever been. She had even asked him, like, would you still love me even if I was crazy, is what he told the police. But that's like me saying, would you still love me if I was a worm?
I don't know.
Why are you nodding your head like that, Pat?
And she used to do this.
That's basically what you were doing.
No, I was doing this.
Oh, that's so different. Totally different. That's so different.
Totally different movement.
Hey, ghostly gang. The case is cold, and the vibes are haunted.
We've got murder notes, EMF spikes, and no business being awake this late.
But thanks to W Energy Drink, we have clean energy with no crash, so we can hyperfixate on timelines, suspects, and whether or not the attic is haunted or a squirrel is hiding his nuts.
The flavors are criminally good, like we destroyed the evidence good. Not a drop could be found.
It's zero sugar, no artificial colors, and delivers terrifying levels of focus and mental clarity, perfect for connecting red string and angering spirits.
Hit dubby.gg.com.
Use promo code GGP for 10% off.
Dubby. Fueling guilty in the ghostly while the killer's still out there.
And the house is still haunted.
About a week later, after no updates on the case, a reporter ended up contacting the police. And She just was like, is there any update on the case? Like, you know, it was ruled a suicide, then it's ruled a homicide, and it kind of seems like y'all dropped the ball a little bit. And that's when they told her that they were treating the case as a suspicious death, but they're leaning more towards suicide. This, of course, completely contradicts what the medical examiner presented.
Right.
So instead of investigating it as a homicide and then letting the evidence prove it was suicide, they just ruled it as suicide. Then on March 10th, 2011, the medical examiner would change the cause of death, declaring it a suicide. So he's the one that said homicide because of the wounds and the evidence that he had in front of him. And then all of a sudden on March 10th, he's like, never mind, it's a suicide.
That's insane.
Bonkers. Totally freaking bonkers. Well, after it was declared suicide, the police department went silent. They quit talking about anything. Ellen's parents, Sandy and Josh, were absolutely devastated. Her death was not considered a crime, so therefore, there would be no more investigation. Case is considered closed. Of course, Ellen's parents tried to mourn the death of their only child. They took it day by day until they're ready to take the next step, which I was watching a documentary and it was absolutely heartbreaking. Sandy, her mom, was talking to one of Ellen's cousins and she's like, I remember I would come to your house. It is so heartbreaking. And she said, I remember laying on the floor with your dog in the sun because it just felt, I could feel something. And that was the only way I could feel something, was laying on the floor in the sun with your dog. And the cousin's like, I don't remember that at all. And her mom was like, oh, I do. I remember it. Like, you can tell how much it hurt her parents. And continue. I don't want to give it away, but continue to hurt her parents. It is just, I don't see how they can be as strong as they are throughout this entire process and not completely go bananas trying to fight for justice for their daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand how they've held it together. Who is it?
I don't know. Addie's home.
Yep.
Oh. Let me turn that off before I get in trouble.
So they took it day by day until they were ready to take the next step. February of 2013, Sandy and Josh would meet with Thomas Brennan. He was a Pennsylvania state trooper for 25 years. He had retired and became a private investigator. Some mutual friends set the meeting up between the Greenbergs and Thomas, or Tom. I think I call him Tom throughout it. During the first meeting, he asked, you know, what evidence they had, and they told him that they have the autopsy report. They do have a few photos from the autopsy, and they have very few crime scene photos. So even though the Greenbergs had the photographs, they could never bring themselves to look at them. So they had no idea what it actually contained, which I don't know if I would be able to either.
That'd be difficult.
They gave him everything they had so that he could look over it. And after reviewing everything, Tom told Sandy and Josh, this is a murder. This is absolutely a murder. They asked if he would help them, and he said, yeah, but I need you to be patient. Like, this is not going to be quick. The law and everything takes a long time. Be patient, but I will help you. Josh asked, well, what's that going to cost? Thinking, oh, Lord, you know, how much is this going to cost us? And Thomas told them that he doesn't profit off of anyone's grief. His time will not cost them a dime. He warned them, this is going to be a fight. And Josh and Sandy said, let's go. They were ready.
Good for them.
They knew that Ellen deserved justice and they wanted answers. So Tom went to work. Tom noticed a lot of discrepancies in the report. The first one that stood out to him was in the pictures of the crime scene. He noticed that there was dry and coagulated blood on Ellen's face. The dry blood went across her face, going from her nose to her ear. But if you remember, she was slumped over, sitting up against the cabinet. So how is blood going to go sideways if she is sitting up? Because mm-hmm. gravity would pull it down.
Mm-hmm.
This is an indication that the body possibly had been moved. Plus, they also found various bruises all over Ellen's body in different stages of healing that had nothing to do with her death. They were on her head, torso, arm, and leg. He did see that she had Klonopin and Ambien in her system, but she had a prescription for those. No other drugs or medications were found in her body. Mm-hmm. Just those two that she was prescribed. And there was no, like, huge amounts of either one of them. It's like she was taking it as prescribed. Yeah. He checked the psychiatrist's notes about the three meetings with Ellen. When asked about Sam, it is noted that she would smile when talking about him, but and denied physical or emotional abuse. But again, people are very good at hiding those things. Very good at hiding those things. So, Tom continued to work on the case, and he began making connections. In 2015, he got a tip that there was someone that worked in the DA's office that was willing to look at the case on his own time. His name was Guy DeAndra, I believe is how you say his last name. Guy began investigating on behalf of the Greenbergs, and he started looking for the case file. He's like, I need that case file from the DA's office. I need that case file. He couldn't find it in the homicide files, and he's like, well, it wasn't ruled a homicide, so okay, maybe that makes sense. So he kept searching and searching and searching. He finally found it, stuck in a filing cabinet in a closet where they kept holiday decorations for the office.
That's the I hope it never gets brought back up file.
Yeah.
Is what that is.
Yeah. It makes you wonder what other files were with it. What else is in there?
Yeah.
He then begins organizing and going through it because it basically had three different files. There was the homicide file, the DA file, and then the medical attorney file. So basically three different ones for each investigation. He begins putting it all together and creating one big file to compare it all together. Guy and Tom begin working together, and they get the 911 call, and they listen to it.
I just walked to my apartment. My fiance is on the floor with blood everywhere.
What is the address?
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please come. Help. 4601 Flat Rock Road.
Is this a house or apartment?
Oh, no. It's an apartment. Please hurry, please.
Where is she bleeding from?
I don't know. I can't tell. She's.
So you have to calm yourself down in order to get you some help.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm looking at her right now. I can't see anything. There's nothing broken. She's bleeding. Ellie!
You don't know where she's bleeding from? Can't see where the blood's coming from?
I think she hit her head. But it's up everywhere. Everywhere.
Think she might have fallen? Do you know what happened?
She may have slipped. There's blood on the table. Her face is a little purple.
Okay, hold on for rescue for her. Stay on the phone.
What's wrong?
I went downstairs to go work out. I came back up. The door was latched. My fiance's inside. She wasn't answering. So after about a half hour, I decided to break it down. I see her now just on the floor with blood. She's not responding.
Okay, is she breathing? Look at her chest. I need you to calm down, and I need you to look at her chest. It's really.
I don't think she is. I really don't think she is.
Listen to me. Someone's on the way. Look at her chest. Is she flat on her back?
She's on her back.
Look at her chest and tell me if it's going up and down, up and down.
I don't see her moving.
Okay, do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay, I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her flat.
Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get there?
I have to, right?
Okay, so get her flat on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off. Okay, kneel down by her side.
Oh, my God. Allie, please.
Listen, you can't freak out, sir, because you
okay, I'm trying not to. I'm trying not to. Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper.
Rip
oh, my
off.
God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell with a knife. Oh, no. Her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Oh, she stabbed herself?
I guess so. I don't know where she fell on it. I don't know.
Okay, well, don't touch it.
Okay, so I just let her down here now? I mean, what do I do?
No, I mean, you can't, if the knife is at her chest, it's going to be kind of hard for you to do CPR at this time.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Police, which operator?
277.
Is someone coming here?
Yes, they are. You said 4601 Flat Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay, someone's on the way. And the knife is still inside?
Which or what?
The knife is still inside of her?
Yes, I didn't take it out.
Was it her chest or what area?
It's in her chest. It looks like it's right in her heart.
Okay, someone's on the way out there. Okay, just get.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
How old is she?
She's 27.
27, and there's no sign of life at all.
No, please don't be. What?
Bend her under her arm and tell me if she responds to pain.
She's. Ellie, she's not, her arm, her hands are still warm. I don't know if that means, but there's blood everywhere. I mean.
I know, but you can't, and the knife is still inside of her. How far? Can you see how far it went in?
It looks pretty deep.
Okay.
It looks three, and it's a long knife.
Don't touch anything.
Yeah, don't touch anything, okay?
I'm not touching anything. I can't believe this, though.
No, wait, it was just you there with her?
We're the only ones here.
And she ran in the door, you said, latched it shut?
No, I went downstairs to work out, and when I came back up, the door was latched.
Oh.
Like, it was locked from the inside, and I'm yelling, and yelling.
Was your house broken into?
No.
So there's no sign of a break-in?
No sign of a break-in at all. I mean, there will be when you get here, because I had to break the latch, but.
She asked. Are you willing to do CPR? And he says, I guess I have to, right? This is your fiance.
This guy seems really off. Like, there's a lot going on in that call.
A lot. And the way he switches on and off, like,
mm-hmm.
I understand, like, that's the operator's job is to calm you down and keep you calm and focused on what you're doing. But it's like a light switch, yeah. Like acting like, oh, I've got to be calm now because she's telling me to be calm. Oh, I need to be upset because I need to be the concerned fiance. It's just weird.
It's really weird.
It's so freaking weird. And how do you not see a knife? She wasn't wearing baggy clothes. Like, it's not like she had baggy clothes, so it was hanging over it.
Yeah, and then he says it's a pretty big knife.
Yeah.
So.
Very strange.
That's a very odd 911 call.
Very strange. Well, after 4 years have gone by now, so this is 4 years later that they got this PI to start looking into this case. Media hasn't really covered it, and Tom recommended to the Greenbergs that it'd be a good idea to get the media's interest back in it, get people talking about it. And so they reached out to a few journalists. Nobody would really pick it up except for they found one. And she's like, let me look at it. I do remember this case when it first happened and I did cover it then. And she's like, I want to help. Let me help. So she started working it, and she would actually interview two of the detectives that worked the case. They told her that they still believed that the death was a suicide due to the door being locked from the inside. Josh had told police that Phil, the concierge, was with him when he broke down the door. The detectives also claimed that due to the lack of defensive wounds, this also supported the suicide ruling. They did admit the scene was not originally treated as a homicide investigation, and they did have to go back to reinvestigate. They did test the knife for DNA, and only Ellen's DNA was found on the knife. To me, that's strange too, because if they both live in the apartment, it makes sense her DNA is on there. Why isn't his?
Mm-hmm.
He lives there too.
That is kind of weird.
That's just my personal thought. In 2019, that same journalist ended up reaching out to Josh Shapiro with the Philadelphia District Attorney Office. They had been doing their own investigation into the case, and they claimed that they have done a very thorough investigation, and they found some searches on Ellen's computer that occurred between December and January. Allegedly, the searches included, here's what they included, suffocation, suicide methods, sex fantasy death, Zoloft, Prozac side effects, girl electrocuted to death, bath death, quick suicide, and painless suicide. However, none of these searches were ever mentioned in the original reports by the police when they reopened it as a homicide. Wasn't anywhere in that case file. This didn't come out till 4 years later when supposedly the DA's office was reinvestigating it. And just a reminder, Sam's uncle took the computer and had it for about a week before giving it back to police. Ellen was not on Zoloft. She was not on Prozac, just Klonopin and Ambien. Nothing else was found in her system. And it's also worth noting that the computer was not password protected and was more of like a shared home computer. It was like the family computer, basically. And of course, everyone knows that you can wipe computer history. But if you know your way around a computer, you can insert search histories with specific dates and timestamps to make it look like it happened at different times. So, there's that. The Philadelphia DA stood by the ruling of suicide, and the journalist decided to publish a story to help bring answers to the family after all of her findings and nothing adding up. She's like, this does not make sense. I'm running my story. This would drum up a lot of interest, so many questions were left unanswered. The Greenberg's attorney, Joe Pedroza, would file a lawsuit asking the city to change the ruling from suicide to homicide or even undetermined. Like, they were like, I don't even care if it's homicide, just do it as undetermined. That way we can open up an investigation. Tom, the PI, Guy from the DA's office, and a forensic pathologist all join forces to go over the evidence. They start going back over the timeline. Police say that Ellen would have died between 4:50 and 5:27. This is completely based off the timeline that Sam had given the police. They knew that Ellen couldn't have died before 1:47 because Ellen had made that phone call. And she was seen on footage filling up her gas tank on the way home from school. Again, I know people do weird things even when they are contemplating taking their own lives. They do kind of still go through the normal motions. So I guess that's still a possibility. But it is strange that if she was thinking about doing this, why would she stop to fill up her gas tank on the way home?
Yeah.
And in the apartment, she was literally in the middle of making a fruit salad. Like, there was still fruit on the counter. It looked like she was literally in the middle of making a fruit salad.
That damn strawberry was the last straw.
So not only was she in the middle of making a fruit salad, they said there was no struggle in the kitchen. It did not look like there was any struggle. In the crime scene photos, the knife block is knocked over and there's knives scattered across the counter. Very interesting. And they brought up a good point. It's a very small crime scene. So no, the entire apartment would not be completely tore up top to bottom, you know, to show a struggle. But a knife block being knocked over with knives scattered on the counter. If there's no struggle, that's kind of weird. That's that's strange. They also discover that there was a dissection of her neck when the autopsy was done. The report said that there was no hemorrhaging to the strap muscle of her neck, But looking at the photos from the autopsy, it does appear to have discoloration, like there was an injury there. So the report said there was nothing, but you can see in the pictures discoloration around her neck. This aligns with normal evidence of manual strangulation. They even got a second, well, I guess technically third opinion, and that forensic pathologist came to the same conclusion after looking at the case file. Then there's the latch. So let me show you a picture of the latch that he supposedly broke in. So he said the door was locked and he had to break in. So here's kind of a far away picture of the door. You can kind of see where it's broken. And I also got a close up of it. So the door's locked and he had to slam it open with his body. I would think there'd be more damage than that, to be quite honest.
No.
No?
No. Those screws are really small and that door's a piece of crap. If it was a real wood door, then maybe, but that's just one of those real thin, trashy doors. So that it's basically useless. It's there for more just like creature comfort than actual security.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have taken much.
Taken very much.
To just pry that right off.
Well, the building manager herself said that she has experienced this herself, where she would shut a door behind her and it would kind of slam and it would knock that latch over to where it would lock behind her and it would lock her out.
Mm-hmm.
She said, does it happen all the time? No, but it's happened to her and other people in the building, so it does happen. So they're like, well, how did it get locked from the inside if it wasn't her? And she's like, it happens. Like, I've had it happen. There's also a lot of YouTube videos that show you how to lock and unlock those latches from the outside.
Oh, yeah. Tons of them.
And unfortunately, there was no camera in their hallway, so you can't see their door. Otherwise, who knows what we could be answering if there was. The last activity documented on Ellen's work computer was at 4:46, and Sam is seen leaving at 4:50 on the CCTV footage. They went back through Sam's statements. He said that for the 1 hour he was trying to get into the apartment, he thought that she was probably just showering, doing her hair, or working with headphones in, and that's why she wasn't answering the door. Now, if you remember the 911 call, Sam didn't realize that she had a large knife sticking out of her chest until later when she was like, you know, lay her on her back to do CPR. That, and all of a sudden he's like, oh my gosh, there's a knife.
Mm-hmm. Well, she didn't even say lay her on her back. She said something about her back, and then he said something about her already being on her back. So
yeah.
She was already in that position.
Yeah.
He had already... Because didn't you say that she was like slumped over something?
Yeah.
So he had already moved her and manipulated her body. He had to have seen or felt that.
Yep.
You would think.
Well, they went ahead and, just out of curiosity, measured the distance from the door to where Ellen was found against the cabinets, thinking, you know, maybe that's why he didn't see it. It was only 10 feet from the front door to the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't see a knife. And like you said, she slumped against a cabinet with a literal knife sticking out of her chest. And he himself said, it's a pretty big knife.
Mm-hmm.
But you missed it? You didn't see it? The Greenbergs team decided to ask one more time if they would change the manner of death from suicide to homicide voluntarily, and gave them 14 days to make the decision. The city officials. It was still not done. They would not agree. So they said, we're taking you to court. So they would end up filing a lawsuit, and this would also allow them to access more surveillance footage that they have not had access to with filing this lawsuit. When they requested the footage from the 15 to 20 different cameras, at first, the investigators said they don't exist. Like, there's no videos. They're like, hang on. They have 15 to 20 different cameras in that building, and you're telling me you didn't get any footage? No, it doesn't exist. So they went back and forth several times. Each time they're told they don't exist. So finally, the Greenberg's attorney was like, all right, I've had enough. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to file an affidavit to where you have to sign off on record saying there is no footage, that you didn't collect any, you didn't see any, and go on record. And what do you know? All of a sudden, oh, we do have footage.
Oh, my God.
Insane. Now, if you remember, Sam stated that Phil, the concierge, was with him when he broke down the door.
Mm-hmm.
He did not mention anything about him being there on the phone call, the 911 phone call. And after reviewing the footage, Phil was not with Sam when he entered the room. Phil is seen downstairs when Sam is upstairs breaking into the apartment.
Well, he told him he wasn't going to leave his post.
Yeah. And that's what Phil said in the documentary. He's like, don't be lying on me. Like, I told you I couldn't leave my post. I take my job very seriously. It's a security concern. I did not leave my post. Don't lie on me to cover your ass.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. The Goldbergs team thought, you know, that's strange. It's an inconsistency. And not only that, they realized that wasn't reported in the police report. That wasn't mentioned until they were viewing the medical examiner's report. And that's why the medical examiner switched it from suicide to homicide. Because Sam stated that there was a witness that went into the apartment with him and found her on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't find that out until they had this deposition for this lawsuit. So they're like, what the is going on?
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up finding out that there was a meeting that included... They think, because there's no documentation, they think the meeting included members of the police department and Pontario, I believe is how you say her last name. She is part of the DA's office and the medical examiner. They got together and had a meeting to discuss the manner of death after the medical examiner's initial ruling of homicide. Let me get a drink. At that meeting... is when the change was made from suicide to homicide. For this big important meeting to change the manner of death, they did not keep any notes from the meeting. They were very vague about who was at the meeting. They would not say what was said or who said it. When they were asked specific questions, they basically were just like, I don't remember. Oh, it wasn't me. I don't remember who said that the entire time they were asking these questions. But again, if it's such an important meeting that you're completely changing this, why wouldn't you keep notes?
Very good question.
The next person interviewed during the deposition was Dr. Lindsay Emery. The Greenbergs were not even aware of Dr. Emery until the medical examiner said they had asked her to do her own investigation as a neuropathologist. So there were questions about Ellen's spinal cord and if it had any damages from the wounds suffered to the back of her neck. And they wondered if that would affect her ability to be able to complete the final blow into her chest or even in any of the other wounds. She said that there were three possibilities. One, there was not enough time between the spinal wound and when Ellen died to have caused a response. Two, the wound didn't cause enough damage to the tissue in that area to cause more than just, you know, like tingling and numbing in her arms. Or three, Ellen was already dead at the time of when the wound was inflicted. And you can see on the video, the attorney goes, Wait a minute. So you're telling me that wound could have been done after death? Because, again, the amount of blood did not make sense. Mm-hmm. And at first, she realized what she said. And at first, she's like, no, that's not what I said. He goes, but you just said it could. One of those reasons could be it was post-mortem. And she's like, yeah, that's, yeah, yeah, basically. And, which I didn't include it in here because I couldn't find a whole lot of information. Again, she wasn't even known about. She wasn't even in the case file. They did not even find out about her until the medical examiner let it slip during his deposition. And they're like, who is this? And so they go back to her. And she's like, I don't remember if I did this case, yada, yada, yada. Like the whole thing, it's a whole bunch of, anytime that they're questioned, they're like, I don't remember. I don't think I did it. I don't think that was part of my caseload.
Wow.
And just passing the buck off to somebody else. So this, of course, hit the headlines and caused a huge media storm. In result of the findings, a second lawsuit was made, basically saying it's a conspiracy. It's a huge cover-up. The new trial was supposed to start on Monday, February 3rd, 2025. And they were going to start with the jury selection, of course. By this time, the medical examiner had actually acquired his own counsel because he knew he was fixing to get sued. The Greenberg's team reached out to him and they said, look, we won't come after you if you just come to us and tell us the truth. Put everything out there, tell us the truth, and we won't come after you. He said, deal. So that happened on Saturday, literally on Saturday before the jury selection is supposed to happen on Monday. So that he said, deal, I'll do it. Of course, the media hears about it, so they pick it up and it's going crazy. And it went so crazy that Dr. Osborne had to release a statement saying, since issuing the amended death certificate, I have become aware of additional information. It is my professional opinion Ellen's manner of death should be designated as something other than suicide. And this bombshell worked in the Greenbergs' favor. And that Monday, they went to city officials and they finally agreed to settle this outside of court and to have another internal investigation of the case. But 2.5 months go by, nothing changes. It's completely stagnant. No updates, they're not returning calls, nothing changes. Greenbergs, they're trying to be patient, but they feel like the officials have not upheld their part of the bargain. Like they're waiting for answers or waiting for this change, and nothing, literally nothing happens. Well, finally, the city officials announce that they are going, they allegedly received more information supporting that it was a suicide. On October 10th, 2025, Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Lindsay Simon officially ruled Ellen's death as a suicide.
Oh my God.
She did acknowledge the unusual nature of the injuries. And their attorney refuted the medical examiner's new report. And as of January of this year, the only other thing that has come about is that the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania is interested in the Ellen Greenberg case.
Good.
The Philadelphia Inquirer reported that the U.S. Attorney Office issued subpoenas as part of an inquiry into whether Greenberg's death was properly investigated. But there, as of right now, there have not been any more updates. So that was January of this year.
Wow. Well, at least it's gained some traction, I guess.
I hope. Somebody else is investigating it. Mm-hmm. Like, well, Sam has since remarried. For a while, he still had contact with her parents. They weren't like buddy buddies, but they would check in. And same with her, I think, cousins and friends. They would text on her birthday. They would text on the anniversary of her death. And the mom even said, he even asked me, like, do you think I killed her? And she said, I was very careful with my words. I told him, I don't think she killed herself. And they eventually would lose touch and quit talking because they fully believe that he did it. Sam has since remarried and has had kids of his own. In 2024, he released a statement to CNN saying, when Ellen took her own life, it left me bewildered. She was wonderful and a kind person and had everything to live for. When she died, a part of me died with her. Mental health is real and has many victims. Please do some good by raising awareness for mental health.
This guy, like, for fear of being sued, I can't really state what I want to say.
Allegedly.
Well, yeah, allegedly.
I just, how does somebody stab themselves 20 times?
You don't.
Two, how do you stab yourself 20 times and combine to the back of your neck, your chest, and the top of your head? It does not add up.
No. And like you said, head wounds bleed like crazy. All your extremities bleed like crazy. There should have been blood, a shit ton of
blood everywhere.
And then you mentioned something about the strangulation marks on her neck. And I wonder now that you mentioned that, if maybe he had choked her out and then stabbed her trying to feign a suicide?
I don't know. Or lost his shit and just started stabbing and then was like, oh, I've got to figure something out.
I don't understand.
They also think maybe it was a blitz attack. And so she was making her salad, her fruit salad in the kitchen. And he came up behind her and attacked her basically in a blitz attack. And that's why she didn't have defensive wounds. If he hit just right in her neck behind her, because they're like, well, she didn't have defensive wounds. Well, if he hit just right in her neck, that could affect your mobility. And she turns around as she's falling and he attacks the front of her. I mean, I don't know.
It just doesn't make sense for it to be ruled a suicide at all.
No.
Like, I could see if maybe there were two or three, because a lot of the times in suicide attempts, they don't normally do it the very first time. There's always almost, for lack of a better term, track marks, I guess.
Hesitation marks.
Yeah, hesitation marks. Perfect. There you go. But it's almost like they'll do it once just to see how it feels.
And they did say she had a few stab wounds that were more shallow than others.
Yeah, but I don't see somebody stabbing themselves.
And with women, it's very uncommon for them to take their lives violently. Women are more known for quieter, lack of better term, calmer deaths, poisoning or, you know, something like that. Not stabbing themselves 20 times.
Yeah, well, to stab yourself 20 times, you would have to be so twisted.
Yeah.
Stab yourself once.
And again, why to the back of the neck? That just does not make sense. You have arteries in your legs. If that's what she was doing, if she really wanted to take her life, you have arteries in your legs. You have arteries in your neck. Why would you just go to the back of your neck and your chest?
The back of your neck makes no sense at all. At all.
And again, if you have a large knife, that's going to be really hard to accomplish, to stab yourself in the back of the neck. It blows my mind. And for this family to fight so freaking hard, they're not even asking them to arrest anybody. They're just asking them to look at the case again for answers. And they won't do it. And then for them to say, yeah, we'll do it if we settle out of court. Okay, great. Just kidding. Nope.
Yeah, that's messed up.
We found more information supporting the suicide theory. Okay, what's that information?
Mm-hmm.
What did you find to support your findings again that it's suicide?
Well, I mean, the best thing that could have happened was the U.S.
Yeah.
attorneys are picking it up, mm-hmm. which, good for them.
Yeah, and like I said, that was just here in January. It's only March. Again, this stuff does take
time. Yeah, it takes a long time.
I am praying they find. And it was so sad. At the end of the documentary, her mom said, my goal right now is just to, and this was before they ended up ruling it a suicide again. She said, my goal is to just stay healthy long enough to see this through.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are getting older now. She's like, I just want to stay healthy so I can see this through.
Mm-hmm.
And then for them to come back, what was it, 8 months later and say, oh, we found more information. It's suicide.
Yeah.
Then what's that information? Infuriating.
That's insane.
Now you know why that one sticks with me. It's just one of those cases where it just shows corruption. I mean, what else could it be? What else could it be other than corruption? It's weird that his uncle's connected. He gets her freaking computer and has it in his possession for over a week. Then they happen to find these quote-unquote searches on there, mm-hmm. on medications that she wasn't even taking.
It's almost like somebody was guessing.
Just taking random stuff. And like, what was it? Death, sex, fantasy or something like that? Why would she search that? Why would she search that?
People are into some strange stuff.
Okay. I don't know. It's just very, very strange. His family is very well connected. And then, oh, and that was another thing I didn't mention in this. So they looked at his call log. I should have put it in there. They looked in his call log. Before he called 911, he called his parents and his uncle, and then called 911, and mm. they were already on their way to the apartment before the emergency responders got there.
Wow.
So you walked into the apartment, seen your fiance, you had time to call your parents, your uncle, and 911, and you never realized your fiance had a knife sticking out of her chest?
That's fucked.
Wild. So we'll definitely be following it. I'll set up a Google alert on my phone. That way, if anything comes up, of course, we'll give an update.
Yeah, I'm curious to find out where this goes.
Yeah. And this happened in 2011.
Yep.
So.
Well, the justice system tends to take time.
Yeah. I hope her parents get answers before
it's too late. I sure hope they do, too, because that's bullshit.
Yep.
That's just lazy police work.
Or corruption. One of the two.
Or corruption, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they could be covering it up. Who knows? Who knows who his uncle knows on the police force?
Yep. Makes you wonder.
Yep. Well.
I'm glad to get that out.
Yeah, that was heavy.
I've been holding that in all week. I try not to give you very much information, which I kind of spoiled a little bit on this one, just because you were laying next to me when I was listening to the 911 call, but it's hard keeping this in and be like, okay.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
I just can't even imagine.
There you have it.
Ended on a heavy one, guys.
Next week will be much lighter. You'll get to see us be scared.
Yep. It'll be a lot more fun.
Yeah. It'll be a lot more fun. We're hoping that Seth and Tori can come so we can show them all the evidence and explain and tell mm-hmm. them what happened and all that fun things.
Yep.
So I guess that's it for now. I've got to go do some laundry, pack a bag, because we're headed to softball weekend and over by Dallas.
Yep.
So good luck to our girls.
Yep, I hope they do well.
Yeah. So tune in next week where the guilty confess.
And the ghostly never rest.
You remembered. So proud of you.
What can I say?